Dr. Amy Spurlock. I teach, I'm an associate professor at Troy University, which is in southeast Alabama. We're about 2 hours north of the Gulf Coast. If you drive down the main drag in Troy, you will hit the Gulf Coast 2 hours later. So we're quite close to hurricanes there. All right, let's see. Do I hit this? Okay, thank you. Did I hit that one? Okay. Everybody here is probably familiar with Hurricane Katrina. Just some basic facts. It made landfall August 29th of 2005. It actually made two landfalls. It hit Louisiana first, a parish in Louisiana. It actually glanced off of New Orleans. It did not hit New Orleans directly. The damage in New Orleans was due to the levees breaking, the extensive flooding. And then it made another direct hit to the Gulf of Mississippi near Biloxi. And so Mississippi was actually hit harder by Katrina than Louisiana was, and although the news reports really didn't reflect that because of the horror that was happening in New Orleans. It was a Category 4 hurricane, 145-mile-per-hour wind. If you have never been in a hurricane, this is terrifying. I have, and it's very scary. By 3 o'clock, the eye was about 20 miles west of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Hattiesburg is about an hour inland. And when it hit Hattiesburg, it was still a Category 2 hurricane with winds around 100 miles per hour. The damage to Hattiesburg was extensive. You can look at the number of houses that were affected. Electricity was out to every customer in the city for 4 days. That's enough to have everything in your refrigerator rot. I know that firsthand. The entire city lost water immediately after the storm, and only a lucky few that were on one particular water substation got their water back immediately, about a day later. But most of the people did not have running water either. And schools were closed for 3 weeks. So this was mass chaos in Hattiesburg. And this was, again, an hour inland. So what did we do? Well, I teach seniors, I teach graduates and also undergraduates, and I teach public health nursing as one of my assignments. And we decided to go give care to the people in Hattiesburg. We have a hospital near us that our students do a lot of clinicals, and they were a sister hospital to Wesley Medical Center in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and they desperately needed volunteers to help. And so we piggybacked onto that and helped them. So these were our goals and our aims. And one was to provide hands-on care. We took our 12 senior students. We had a really small class that fall. We took them and three faculty and drove to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And the second thing we wanted to do was to publicize what was happening in Mississippi, because everything in the news was about Louisiana, pretty much. So. And we had medical supplies donated by local hospitals. This is actually a picture we took on the way. Those are fire trucks, and we saw a lot of that. We received approval from the university. The details were finalized literally in 2 hours, and the next morning we set out and drove 5.5 hours to Hattiesburg. This is Wesley Medical Center, and this is where we worked and stayed in Hattiesburg. The impact of the hurricane was quite extensive. Wesley Medical Center was on lockdown status. They had one entrance, which was through the ER, and it had an armed guard with guns. We were not allowed to leave the grounds at all because they were afraid that we would be taken hostage for people trying to get inside the hospital. The Wesley Medical Center lost power the day of the hurricane, but they were able to use their backup generators almost immediately. The other hospital in town, Force General, was not as lucky. They blew out their generators, and so they had to they had no water, they had no electricity for about 5 days. Drugs were delivered by the CDC, and the community was wonderful. They donated food for the workers and the patients, and so everybody came in, and we had gumbo, and I tell you, we ate really well that time. They have a 225-bed capacity, and they were full for a week. That was unheard of for them. They had never had that happen, and they treated a record number of patients in the ER as well. Waits were up to 8 hours to get triaged. We were housed in the wellness center. That's us sleeping on mats in the basketball court of the wellness center, which doesn't smell particularly good. We were allowed a 3-minute shower to conserve water, and those were the signs posted, and one towel. When we got there, 3 days after the hurricane hit, and the staff was just exhausted. Some of them had not been home since the hurricane hit. They didn't know how their families were. They didn't know if they had homes. They were just overwhelmed. The phone lines were down. Cell phones did not work because the towers had been knocked down. So they were exhausted, and they literally cried when we got there. So we split up into teams. We worked in the emergency room. They had an acute side and a fast track or clinic side for the non-emergent cases. We saw a lot of chainsaw injuries. Wasn't expecting this. People had trees on their houses, so they fired up those chainsaws and they hit the recoil, and we had a lot of people slicing their kneecaps off. Mental illness seemingly got worse, and I think a lot of that was due to the stressors of the event, but we had a lot of mental illness cases come into the ER. People with chronic illnesses, especially that had run out of their medications, they didn't know how to fill their prescriptions when the pharmacies were closed. And just people that needed food, shelter, water. We had people begging to get into the hospital. We also worked in labor and delivery. I am not an OB nurse, but I was told by the experienced OB nurses that the drop in the pressure can bring on labor. And so they had a higher number of deliveries than usual, which just compounded the issue. And then Wesley Medical Center did not have a NICU. They had a kind of a pseudo NICU, but Forest General did have a NICU, and of course they lost power, so they handbagged 14 babies and brought them across the city, and they didn't lose one, which was amazing. So our student nurses helped with triage, admissions, feeding, rocking, everything you can think of. And then the last thing, and this is what I worked at, the medical surgical unit, the pediatric floor was actually about the only semi-empty floor in the hospital, and so we converted it, some of the beds there, to med-surg, and we took a lot of the evacuees from Slidell, Louisiana, which was very, very hard hit. And we just worked as a team, and we had 3 RNs and 3 student nurses, and we took care of 16 people, and we're very proud that they all made it. So overall, we stayed 5 days. We donated about 800 hours of time. And when we got back, the students were on TV and in the newspaper, and they gave interviews, and they publicized the need for donations and for people to understand what was going on in Mississippi as well. So that was our experience. What are the educational implications? What I like to tell people is that this is the best clinical I never planned. I never could have planned this to work out as well as it did. It was a great experience. And, you know, we teach them about disaster nursing and public health, but it's one thing to read it in the book, and it's quite another thing to experience firsthand. I started looking into this, the policies around this, after I got back, and there's quite a few references out there. The International Nursing Coalition for Mass Casualty Education has actually developed a set of criteria that they think that all public health nurses need to know, or students need to know in public health. And they actually focus on these areas: critical thinking, assessment, technical skills, communication, core knowledge, and professional role development. And this is what they think that every baccalaureate-prepared student needs to know in order to practice competently in a disaster. Ethical implications, there's quite a bit. I just took provisions 2 through 4 from our ANA code for ethics with interpretive statements. All of these, I think, apply particularly well. One thing that I think that needs to be said, though, is even if you're in an emergency situation, standards and code of ethics and values and competence cannot be compromised. You still need to uphold those ideals of the profession. Now, some of the standards might be more flexible at certain times, but you still have to operate within your scope of practice. You can also look up the scope and standards of public health nursing, and I thought this was great. It that public health nursing includes an obligation to reach out to all of those who might benefit from an intervention or service, particularly those from high-risk or vulnerable populations. And people that are experiencing a disaster certainly fall into that category. So what are the federal policies associated with this? When a disaster happens, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services will declare a federal disaster in that area, which is what happened with Katrina. And this actually enables the waiver of certain requirements that we normally hold. For example, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, they will pay providers for service regardless of whether they meet the criteria if it's in an emergency situation. For example, they're not stringent on beds. If a patient is admitted to a hospital in a psychiatric bed, they need to stay in a psychiatric bed. But what happens in a disaster is sometimes a patient will need to be discharged from acute care services and maybe go into a nursing home because their level of care has dropped. But in the case of a disaster, they will waive that requirement until they can find a bed for that patient. So those kind of things are waived. And another one is the use of beds. You can change bed status from, say, pediatric bed to a med-surg bed like we did. We created our own unit. The requirements for EMTALA for emergency rooms are not as stringent during this time either. It allows for easier transfer of patients to other facilities. We had quite a few patients transfer from Forest General to Wesley Medical Center under that requirement. And also the normal licensing agreements are waived for physicians, nurses, and other healthcare providers. So I was able to practice on my Alabama license in Mississippi. And then one of the most interesting things to me is that HIPAA was really changed. You know, HIPAA is kind of a bugaboo sometimes for people. We didn't have to worry about being able to talk to family members on the phone because those requirements were waived. I had a nursing home patient who we could not identify for days. She was evacuated from Louisiana. She had Alzheimer's. She didn't know who she was. She knew she had kids. She didn't know their names. We finally tracked down one of the sons, and I was able to talk to him quite a bit to be able to identify this lady, and that never would have happened, you know, with normal HIPAA regulations. We're also allowed to waive HIPAA if it pertains to their treatment status over the phone. So that we had quite a lot of that happening too. And then finally, work release during disasters. The Center for American Nurses, through the American Nursing Association, has actually developed guidelines for nurses that are interested in working in times of disaster. They have a work release statement, and they also have guidelines for employers. The ANA feels, and I think most nursing organizations would mimic this, that we have a responsibility to participate in disasters when possible, and that our employers should work with us in order to do that. That's our group. Those are my students, and that's me in the bottom left wearing glasses because I didn't have contacts. So that's our experience. Are there any questions? Yes. We had a lot of that actually. They got credit for clinical time in public health. We felt that was necessary, and so we had a component of that called post-conference, and we spent a lot of time on that. The students actually had a hard time letting go of their patients. They were worried about them. Some of them, when we left, still didn't know where their families were, so we were able to call and check up on them, and we did a lot of debriefing. Our psych professor came in and talked to all of us. We all needed it. We didn't get a lot of sleep either, so... we were really run ragged when we got back, but it was great. It was a great experience. I highly recommend it if you ever get the opportunity to do it. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. They were graduating seniors. This was in September, and they graduated in December. And I would have had a difficult time, I think, having lower level students because we really just threw them in there and let them go. And they, I mean, with some supervision, but, you know, people students in definitely the first year of a program, I don't think would be appropriate for this. They would be better like in a Red Cross, maybe that kind of situation. But when they're all they're this close to graduating, you know, they did fine. Well, thank you very much. Enjoyed presenting.